This week, your detailing questions answered with Garage Therapy.
Brought to you by Nineworks.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the Nineworks Marketplace. Nineworks Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks, and Max Newman. Nineworks Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the Nineworks Driven Not Hidden Collective.
Andy, Max, how you doing, gents?
Really good.
Very well, very well. How are you? Wicked. Yeah. Really good. Thank you. Really good. Thank you to everybody at home for joining in to another episode on Nineworks Radio. My name is Lee Sibley. We've got Andy Brooks and Max Newman in the house as always. And we're shortly going to be joined by two guests from Garage Therapy as well. So specialist yeah. episode.
We've got some good questions coming from the collective this week. I think they're really good.
Some great questions.
Going to stretch the boys.
Yeah, definitely. And it's nice that we've managed to get some of the collective involved, because there are some questions maybe a little bit outside the box that maybe the three of us possibly wouldn't have thought about. So
absolutely.
Yeah, very much so. In fact, we've got so many questions, I think, you know, we'll probably have to run it on for another episode as well.
Yes, definitely. So with that in mind, we'll get Maz and Roger on from Garage Therapy. Now, if you don't know the Garage Therapy story, it's worth pointing out that I think it was last series now, or the series before, certainly earlier this year, Maz from Garage Therapy came on and told us all about the business and how that company is ingratiated and possibly even pioneering in the car detailing industry. So it's definitely worth going to listen to that if you would like some context. If not, I'm pretty certain that Maz and Roger's expertise is going to become apparent pretty quickly. So we hope that you'll learn a thing or two. It's clearly to everybody's benefit to get the guys on, so we're grateful for their time.
Yeah. What we can do this week, as you say, Lee, I think folks should go back and listen to the last time Maz came on if they didn't, but we can ask them our new four questions, you know, first, worst, best, and next, and that'll help add a bit of colour at the start of this chat.
Love it. Excellent. Okay, yeah, with that in mind, should we get the boys on?
Yeah.
Maz and Roger, welcome back to Nineworks Radio. How are you, good sirs?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. Good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. So Maz, you know, your tones have been on this podcast before, of course. Roger, is this your Nineworks Radio debut?
Yeah, it's a debut today. Yep.
Excellent. Both members of the Driven Not Hidden Collective as well, so thank you for supporting the community in that way. Indeed. Your expertise, I feel like I need to thank you guys, actually, because as has been documented previously, this time last year I just did not take any even passing interest.
I would call it a distaste, Lee. Yeah, a distaste.
I'd agree, Andy. I'd agree. It was a distaste. And then Maz and I, we had a bit of a chat. I came up to visit GT. And I think since then, we've been on this really cool journey where, I mean, we've documented via videos on Nineworks TV all these different facets to car care and detailing, with more to come, by the way. We've filmed it. We've just not published the videos yet. And completely changed my outlook on car care detailing. So I want to thank you both for that, really.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
We also did a fantastic day back in early September now. It was a detailing masterclass at your premises for some members of the Driven Not Hidden Collective. That was a fantastic day out. The feedback I got from members was awesome. And again, like, really nice to see people take such interest in the care and preservation, really, of their pride and joy. And then and learn a lot from you guys, you know, what you've got in terms of your expertise in the locker there. It was great to just see you pass a couple of those snippets on to others, really, for the benefit of their own ownership experience.
There was quite a few people as well, which was good to see. It was quite, you know, an engaging event, I would say. Yeah. There was a lot of questions on some obscure things that we've not heard before in terms of looking after the cars, but it was really, really good. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, 100%. And again, just off the feedback of that, I think there's potential to do more of that next year. So if you're listening and you want to get involved in that, obviously, you know, by now the DNHC is the place to be, and we'll put that on for members, providing you guys are happy to do it, of course.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, sure.
I wish I was there. Sorry, I missed it. I'll definitely be there for the next one.
Yeah.
It's a really good day. One.
Next time, Andy and Max. But you may or may know, Maz and Roger, that we've got new questions to ask the guests now. So maybe Andy or Max, would you like to dive in and take it from here, really, as we colour in our guests?
Go on smooth, Max. You go for it. Question master.
The first one that we want to know about, guys, is we want to know about your first car. We want to know where your motoring journey started.
I guess I'll go first then. I think my worst one, I think, is this. My start is it was a Clio RT in a burnt orange. It was the Mark II, I think, or Mark III it was, and it was terrible, to say the least. That was my car for around about 6 months, I think, before I ripped it off.
We'll stick, Roger, we'll do the four questions with you, I think, and then we'll go over to Maz, just so it don't get confusing in this section. Sure. So it's first, worst, next and best are these new four questions that we're asking our guests, and there's one rule: the worst car isn't allowed to be your first.
Oh crap.
Okay, so just to chuck that in there.
An orange though, that's pretty cool. It doesn't sound like a bad first car, I think, you know, a little bit chic.
Chic, yeah, I think maybe is the word for it, but it wasn't a very reliable car. It was a Renault.
Did you write it off?
I wrote it off coming out of a junction at Newbury Park, and I was pulling right across traffic. There was a big traffic jam going across, and I pulled into the right, and the car was coming down the inside and basically took the whole front off of the engine, took the engine with it, took the whole thing.
Brilliant.
Wow.
Feet sticking out of a bulkhead.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I felt like a bit like a Flintstone.
Ouch.
Sounds like the best thing that could have happened to it, maybe, eh?
It probably was, actually, yeah, to be honest.
So that was a start, but it can't be your worst. So what was your worst?
The worst... I guess my worst is actually what I've currently got, which is a Skoda Octavia VRS, which is my kind of workhorse. And that's the worst because... it is the best part of 16 years old, and things just fall off of it as quick as I can put them back on. literally, I went to the HQ last week, I think it was, and the dust guards were falling off, and I sounded like I was literally dragging my exhaust pipe down the road. So it's not a nice car. It's probably my worst car I've ever owned, but it's okay. It does its job. It does its job.
Workhorse, eh? Okay. So that's, I guess that set you up well for 996 ownership though, didn't it? So, you know, you're doing okay.
Yeah, I've kind of got used to it. That's kind of that prequeled me straight into the 996.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, so what about your best? I mean, I remember, you know, you've got quite a glittering history of cars. What's the best car? It was interesting when we were talking about this, the things that, you know, tug at you for what is your best car and why it's your best car.
I would say my best car was probably my Leon, I think. It very closely followed by an S4 Avant that I had. And only the Leon wins purely because I completely modified it to a point where it was no longer a Leon. It was more something else. It had a quaife diff on it. It had remapped it. It had every nut and bolt taken out of it and replaced, even down to what Maz always finds hilarious, the story of the engine mounts are replaced with solid engine mounts. Mm-hmm. Now that would be, you know, it would be fun in any other world, but it was a diesel. So on idle at traffic lights, it was interesting, I think is the word I would use.
I love that. You fool.
Well, you do things when you're about 20 and you realize, oh, shouldn't have done that, really.
I bet your girlfriend loved it. Mind, I don't know if that's too bleak for the podcast.
She never sat in the car ever. Literally, she hated it.
I knew Roger regretted it when he started talking about if we put the VAGCOM in, we start raising the idle about 200 revs, it might shallow out the vibrations.
Yeah. It didn't.
Brilliant.
That sounds like it was a contender for worst car as well as best car.
It was, but when you were moving and you weren't idling and you were really going, like, pushing it on, it was an obscenely fun car. I lived at the time in Basildon, and it was the roundabouts and straights is just like Milton Keynes. It's just roundabout straights, and that's where it really excelled. And I just remember back at that point, everyone was driving around in Subarus, and you go round roundabouts, and because it was a auto bias diff for torque, it would drag you round the roundabout. So it would basically find the nearest grip, which was the inside wheel, and just drag you round it. So it was a real challenge to get it off of a roundabout, because you had to push it off the roundabout where it wanted to go towards the roundabout, which is kind of very anti what everyone else thinks normally with a diff. But because of that, you could go round a roundabout where, you know, Scooby would be trying to get rid of you. Yeah, he couldn't get rid of you. You were just literally on his backside all the way, and he couldn't get rid of you.
I mean,
the boys of Basildon.
Proper, yeah. Essex. Love it.
Yeah. Well, I moved to Surrey.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't run a car like that in Surrey. That's just not the done thing, is it? Not the done thing. So what about it? I mean, that sounds like a hell of a motor. You have to share some pictures about that so we can put them on the Instagram.
Yeah,
people are going to want to see that.
Yeah, we'll do.
So what was actually really gratifying about modifying the diesels was SEAT at the time was winning the British Touring Car Championships in their diesel SEATs as well. So rather than our friends taking the piss out of us, we were like, well, you know, they win touring cars, obviously, the diesels.
It's like quintessential win on Sunday, sell on Monday. Or is it win on Sunday, modify on Monday?
Yeah.
But that does play into what we'd said before, whereby, you know, your best car is often formed around the memories they create. And you know, Maz has intimated before with you two kind of really pushing that with your diesels. They were, you know, well-known around the UK with well-known on forums and everything else. And again, where you're pointing out Basildon and whatnot. And this was, what, 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, it must be 10, 15 years ago.
So I remember with personal experience exactly what that whole scene was like around that part of country at the time. And I can only imagine the memories that you must have of that car and you know, the scene. It was massive at the time. It was massive.
All I can see in my mind's eye at the moment is you three wandering around with white socks and little loafers and, I don't know, all sorts of Essex stuff going on. It's just amazing to think about it.
Yeah, but do you know what? Like, you know, it was a massive part of UK car culture. Like a lot of what was going on there, you know, I can think of like different like hot spots for like the modified car scene in the UK. And at Fast Car Magazine, we had to document a lot. And Essex was massive amount of like fast car cruises that happened around there. And there would literally be like over 1,000 cars descending to a certain location on a Saturday evening night. And it would just shut the place down. Like it was as a melting pot for car culture. You know, you can laugh about it or whatever, but like it should be appreciated, you know, and a lot of those guys and girls have kind of come to Porsche and gone elsewhere and done this, that, the other, but like it started in those venues, you know, whether it was Lakeside or whatever.
That was the Mecca.
You know, South End. Yeah, it really was. South End, I think, was massive. Yeah. But anyway, we digress. We need your next car, Roger, to complete the four.
After I get the trumps with the 996 now, I think I'd like to have the next car would probably be a 997 Turbo, if I can get hold of one. If that wasn't the next car, it would be a Macan for the family. So that would be my two options.
Two great choices. So you're thinking 997 Turbo, you're thinking first gen, second gen, PDK, first gen manual?
Manual.
Nice.
Yeah. After I saw Maz's, I was like, I want that. Can I have that? So it'll be trying to find something like that.
Yeah, lovely. Very appealing proposition, that, I've got to say. Once you change the wheels, take them wheels.
All right, Maz, on to you then, mate. So we need first, worst, next, best and next, please. We'll start with first car, obviously.
So my first car was a gold Fiat Punto Sporting.
What year is that? Is that like
2002 or 2003?
Okay.
Maybe earlier.
That's awesome, Mass. That little 1.2 fire engine, that's a cool little car.
It was apart from it being made of Swiss cheese and things falling off as you drove down the road, it was actually a really, for a first car, it had, like you said, a firecracker 1.2 liter engine. I think it did 0 to 60 in 10 seconds back in those days, which in the land of 1.2 liter engines, it was actually quite quick, and the handling on it was really good. I actually had fond memories of it because it handled and it went so well. I think that the bad part about that car was just the build quality was atrocious.
Yeah, pretty much all Fiats are like that, aren't
they?
But quite nicely proportioned. That's a good looking car. I remember when they came out, because the Punto GT was a blown 1.4, wasn't it? And that was pretty wild.
Yeah, that was rad. Yeah. That was rad.
And then the Sporting came along and they said, actually, this has got some finesse to the way that it...
Well, it was gold, Max, you know. Everyone could see me coming down the road. Especially in Essex.
Yeah, look at the business.
That's the best first car we've had so far, Maz. You're at the top of the tree on that one. Well done.
Go on then, worst car.
Worst car. This is going to be controversial. I think my worst car is because I knew it was going to get stolen, was the BMW 335D. But that's not really the worst car. Probably my worst car was I had a 110 horsepower Seat Leon before I got the higher powered one. And it was just a 1.9. It wasn't even a pump deuce engine, actually. It was just a 1.9 normal diesel rattly Seat Leon with, I think it had something like 70,000-80,000 miles on it when I got it. But it did the job. It got me from A to B in relative comfort. So yeah.
So similar with Roger there, for where it's, you know, it did the job but didn't enthral, I would say. So best car then.
Oh, best car. You know, I don't really have a best car. I would say my best car was the 997 C4S.
Cocoa brown.
Yeah, it never let me down. It was a low mile example. It was actually an ex Porsche GB car. And it was just fully spec'd. I mean, it had every single option ticked on it. It was a very special car.
First gen, second gen?
It was the first gen, so the M97. Yep. So it just had everything: sports exhaust, carbon ceramics, the lobster claw wheels, which I think came standard at the time. The cocoa interior.
It's a nice interior. Lovely.
Yeah, it was extended leather. Option was ticked. Porsche crests everywhere. I think they even had some special crests on the alloys. I can't remember what the option, but that was an option at the time.
There's nods of approval from your business partner there as well.
Yeah,
liking that.
Yeah, he had the upgraded lights at the time.
Thing is, because you said that was a Porsche GB car, so that was a press car, basically.
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah, so, I think I remember pictures of that. I'm sure I'll go back through old issues of T911 magazine, and I'm sure I remember that car like on a road trip. Might have been to Rheims because Ali took some pictures of it. I'm sure, like, just where you're describing that spec, it stands out. But the press cars were always really well optioned traditionally because they wanted to cast the car in its just, you know, ultimate guise, you know, regardless of the model. So it's obviously great for you as a future owner, I guess, that you're able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and as a first foray into my Porsching life, it was a fantastic sort of first Porsche. I mean, as a point to point car, it was brutally fast, ample sort of grip because it was four wheel drive, great balance. The engine was a peach, especially in the last couple of thousand revs. And I think the DFI, when they changed to the DFI variants of the engine, it lost that howl at the top end. like the old 97 engines used to have. So yeah, it was a great car.
Wicked, absolutely.
Okay, on the inside, Maz, what colour on the outside?
It was GT silver.
Smart, lovely.
And I think what made it better was the fact that because it had the carbon ceramics and it had the lobster claws in silver as well, it was quite a bright car.
Yeah.
And the contrasting interior, obviously, with it being brown, it just set the car off. It looked really nice. As I said, I think in the previous podcast I was on, there was different shades of GT silver, and this one was the more pearly silver. So it's actually quite a pearly, bright silver. You can get some GT silvers that are actually quite dark. So I was quite lucky with that.
Nice.
Tidy, mate. Tidy. So quite a pertinent question to finish, then we'll get on to the specialist questions. But yeah, your next car, I know you might be on the cusp of something, maybe. Maybe, who knows? Maybe twisting.
I think my next car will likely be a 991.2 GT3 Club Sport.
So moving from what you have currently, which is 991 Turbo S. Yes. Gen 1. So it's a bit of a change up, I guess, you know, going from turbo GT Grand Tourer to high revving Nat Asp GT product from Porsche Motorsport.
Yes. Yeah. I think for my next car, I just want to experience something completely different. And I like to go on track now. So I think that's the next logical step.
Yeah. Yeah. Wicked, absolutely wicked, guys! Thanks for doing that. Like I said, just kind of colours you in a little bit. The best way to describe that. We're going to chuck some specialist questions at you very shortly that others have written into us from the collective that they want to ask you guys. But I guess straight off the bat, it'd be nice to know, like, and Maz, you've touched on like the history of Garage Therapy in a podcast earlier this year. But you know, how long have you two been business partners?
I guess officially since 2008. In a more professional detailing capacity.
Yeah.
But with Garage Therapy, the last, since 2018, 2019.
A lot of history.
Yeah, a lot of history. As I said on the previous thing, we obviously met in 2006 where we started modifying cars together. that changed into how do we keep them clean, and I guess the rest is history.
Right. Let's dive into the questions, guys, because I know a lot of listeners are going to be here to essentially leech off your expertise, Maz and Roger. So we spoke in the previous podcast about how, that kind of whole enthusiast sphere for preservation and detailing and general car care has rocketed in the last certainly 10 years. Everybody's keen to keep their pride and joy looking as resplendent as possible and in best condition as possible, whether it's a Porsche or not, really. But these questions have come from our members of the Driven Not Hidden Collective. So thank you to those who submit some questions. We really appreciate that. We'll try and get through as many as we can in the time we've got today. So the first one, and Maz, Roger, it's kind of open to you both. So whoever wishes to answer, feel free to go for it. The first question is from Andy Collins, who says, is there a method or process to avoid rusty discs and splattered rims when cleaning wheels?
I guess there's not really any, there's no answer to this. Me and Maz have spoken to this on various times, trying to put in rust inhibitors into products and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's iron and it's water and it's oxygen. And that's the three elements you need for rust. There are people that say you can drive the car for 10, 15 minutes, heat the discs up, you know, but then you're kind of going back to where you originally tried to clean the car for because there was brake dust. You've now reintroduced more brake dust, but what you've actually done is brake dust with moisture on your wheels. There's other people that will try and heat the discs up with a hairdryer or a blower. That can work in a certain aspect, but again, also you may or may not loosen any rust you have in between the vents, in between the discs, and then cause more mess for yourself. To me and Maz, the only option you say is get carbon brakes. That's it. That's the end of that's it. There's no other way.
Can I interject? I've got an answer for this.
Have you?
Yeah, so I know what you're going to say, Andy. I know what you're going to say. Yeah, I do. So there's a great product made by Built Hamburg called Atom Mac.
Well done.
And that if you spray that on your discs about 10-15 minutes before you start washing the vehicle, that can help reduce it. But there's quite a process to that. So what you need to do is you need to pre-treat the discs, wash the wheels. Once you finish washing the wheels, pre-treat the discs again, and then try and avoid getting any water on the discs and the wheels.
Well, that's kind of what I do. I use the, what's it called? Atomax?
Built Hamber Atomac.
That's it. Yeah, Atomac. So I spray that on very quickly before I start washing the car, just quickly on the discs. Then I go in and clean the wheels and do what I need to do. I haven't actually tried spraying on afterwards. I've only ever done it pre.
I've used that product extensively for many years now, and the it's a great product, but the problem is that as soon as you introduce water again, it sort of washes that off.
Yeah, it does. Then what I do is I dry off using an air dryer. So I've got like a motorcycle air dryer that I use just to blow off the wheels. And then what I do is I've got four caravan wheel covers, which are, you know, just stop. Then I put those over the wheels and then they just dry off and I don't get any rust. Okay. And I can carry on washing the rest of the car. And then I just whip those off at the end and the wheels are clean, dry and done.
I guess that comes back to how much bother do you want to do to keep your wheels from rusting?
Yeah. Well, it's actually all really quick and easy and doesn't take up any more time.
It does come down to, though, the type of discs that one has. Certain types of iron discs have different materials in them that rust more or less. It comes down to your pad material. If it's a track car and you're using more aggressive brake pads with like ceramic content in the actual pad itself, that may cause less or more brake dust and tarnishing on the brake discs itself, which then causes them to rust more when they get wet, or less, depending again on the pad and the disc combination that you've got on there. You can get discs that are pre-treated with a coating that helps reduce that from happening
on the edges,
I'm seeing more and more of coming into effect. Again, like Roger stated, we have chemicals with rust inhibitor detergents in there that again help reduce it. I think that the summary of it is that there is ways to help reduce it, and in some cases, as you found with your car, and you can stop it, but even that process you just said doesn't completely stop.
No, it doesn't completely stop it, but it's a long way to not having a, you know, once you finish cleaning your car, you've got a red disc in front of you. I might just have a little bit of disc sort of rust flashing, but it definitely stops the majority of it. So I would definitely recommend it.
It's also only on the front face.
Yeah.
The rear face is rusted. And the moment you hit your brake pads, comes off and lands inside your wheel.
Yeah. It's funny, is it? Because, it kind of goes down to, and, you know, we had to clean that STR after going out in it last week. So I saw your setup and it is admirable. It's definitely a kick or two on from mine, like from my point of view. And actually, Maz, it's a great point you make about like the different chemicals involved with like different, not even products, but just like, you know, the discs and pads on the car, as you say, like Little Irish, for example, when I clean the car, they always like rust quickly as a matter of course. And then I just know that whether it's later that day or the next day, I don't really tend to take the car for a burn straight after. Cause as you said, Roger, it kind of defeats the point of cleaning it. But a little bit of light, you know, light braking, just like to begin with, just to like scrub them off, and then it's fine and it's good to go. Whereas the anniversary car, I don't have any issues with that whatsoever. And I can't remember the setups I've got on both, but they are different. And Little Irish is an aftermarket setup, and the 40R is factory. So it's a really good point on that. Right. So question two, maybe Max, Andy, do you want to dive in and we'll kind of take it in turns blitzing through these?
Well, it's a similar, you see, you know, it's in a similar space, isn't it? This question from Barry Hutchinson asking about brake dust. I think maybe the question is what you can do to your wheels to stop brake dust being such a problem, stop it accumulating in such a way in the first place, perhaps, rather than trying to clean it off afterwards.
So we made the video on this, didn't we, Lee?
Yeah, we did.
So I think that the short answer is you're better off ceramic coating the wheel. So do a deep clean on the wheel, take them off if you can, and then applying a ceramic coating on there, a good quality ceramic coating, and that will make cleaning them for the next couple of years, assuming that there's a good bond on the wheel, much easier.
Yeah, agree with that. I had that on both sets of wheels that I had on the 993, both the Cup 2s and the Rotiforms, and they were both ceramic coated, and it makes them so easy to clean. You just don't get, there's no chance of the brake dust actually sticking on the wheel. It comes off when you
and almost it. Just hit them with a pressure wash and that's it. That's all
yeah,
you need.
Yeah. Fully agree with that.
All right.
Go on then, Andy. Next question.
Next question is Lee Fish. Actually, he's got a few. So let's just stick to the first one first, shall we? I've got an Alcantara steering wheel. What's the best way to keep it looking fresh between deep cleaning? And how do I do a deep clean on it?
It's a great question. Great question for you GT product listeners.
My answer is going to be, you can wear racing gloves when you drive, but that's not always the cool thing to do, I guess. So the trick to keeping Alcantara clean is to clean it often. So use a good interior cleaning product. Once you get the detergent in the Alcantara, it's key to remove the detergent from there. It's a bit difficult on the steering wheel, but if you get like a wet towel and then just wipe over it, not saturate it, but just try and get some of that excess detergent out of the material is a good idea. Don't use a lot of pressure because you will fluff up the fibers on the Alcantara. And just keep on top of the cleaning of it and be gentle.
Nice. He's got another question, actually, which I think is a great one. I'm about to move house and will renew my washing kit. Can you recommend a budget-friendly and easy-to-use setup, i.e. washer, dryer, cloths, buckets, etc.? This must be quick and easy to use, as I want to give my cars a 10-minute quick wash after each use, so they're always ready to go. And if it takes too long to set up, then I just won't do it. I think 10 minutes is probably being a little bit ambitious.
It's not going to happen. Yeah.
That's how long it takes me to get all the buckets and everything filled. And
I think more a sort of half an hour wash is more achievable. I don't know what you guys think.
Okay, I guess if the car's already clean and you've only gone for a short drive and you've probably only got a speck of dust and maybe a bit of, you know, dead flies and bugs and stuff on the front end, you could probably get away with like doing a snow foam or a pre-treat clean, and then pressure washing it off after a 2 or 3 minute wait on it and dwell, and then that should get the majority of it off. And then if you towel dry that, or ideally the best option is to blow dry it with some sort of blower, that would be the best, quickest way to do it, other than actually getting the mitts out and properly cleaning it. But you're going to have to do that eventually after a set period of time. You can only do that so many times before. It's a bit like an interim service versus a major service. You have to do one eventually.
Yeah, I think to add to that, from a detailer's perspective, so if we're thinking about the quality of the paint, what you either want to do the process or you're not going to do it. I'm very much in the camp that if the car gets dirty, I just leave it to get dirty until I have the sufficient time to wash it, because I don't want to potentially drag any dirt that may be on the car because I've not done a contact wash on the car. What I mean by contact wash is, you know, a bucket of water and soap and your mitt gliding over the car to loosen that dirt off and rinse it off. Roger's correct. If you want to do it really, really quickly and you've only driven it for a short period of time and the car looks relatively clean, then you could probably get away with a snow foam and a rinse to get get most of that dirt off, but there's always that potential that near the lower portions of the car that it might get really dirty, and then when you dry that section off, you're gonna pull the dirt around at the lower section and cause scratches.
Yeah. What do you guys do? You guys use filtered water at all?
Yeah, so you can have deionized water.
Yeah. So I use that. I've got a canister and I just rinse the car off afterwards. And I find that's a huge time saver because I can put the car away, you know, relatively wet. I don't need to go round and find every bit of water on it. And then it dries off without leaving any sort of watermarks. And I find that a real time saver if you're wanting to do it quickly.
Yeah, resin filtered water is a good way to be able to leave your car slightly damp. But if anyone's got something in their garage that's not quite, you know, airtight, or it's quite dusty in there, what you can do is on those water droplets, they can grab whatever's in the air and then they dry and leave those on the air onto your paintwork.
Good point.
Yeah. I guess as well, it comes down, and Maz, you mentioned this on a previous video that we did, whereby, you know, you have like, so actually, Roger, it also resonates what you said, like if you kind of tie it in with like a major and a minor service, so you have like your big wash, your deep clean, you know, you've looked after the car with like putting a good ceramic coat on, and then you have, I think, Maz, you referred to it in the video as like a maintenance wash.
Yes.
So it's not as in-depth, but in order for that maintenance wash to be effective, you have to have that proper deep clean to begin with. If not, it's
correct.
Just not
gonna
work.
That's an excellent point, Lee. So there's various types of washing. So there's like a chemical decontamination wash, which is what a pro detailer or even a, you know, a normal Joe Bloggs person would do on a car to strip the car off. In terms of the dirt and then any protection, that old protection that you got on the car, and deal with any environmental fallout that's on the vehicle, which we haven't covered, Lee, but we'll cover in the future. And then there's what you could call a light decon wash, whereby during the winter the panels will accumulate a level of dirt, and whilst when you wash the car it looks clean, there's the contaminants are still on the paintwork, so you need to they may cause the paintwork not to feel as smooth, so you need to do a stronger wash than what you normally would do. And then there's the maintenance wash, which is what you've alluded to, Lee, which is your normal regular weekly or every couple of weeks wash, where the car's nicely protected and you just getting it clean, right? But then I think what Lee was referring to was the gentleman who asked the question was effectively a turbo wash, which is what I would call it, whereby you haven't got much time and you really want to hit it quickly and get it clean. The problem with turbo washing is the chances of you causing damage on the car really raises significantly. And that's why I'm not a fan of that style of washing. I'd rather just not wash the car and accept that it's dirty.
Yeah, it's a great shout. And yeah, feeds into the driven not hidden mantra if it's got a little bit of dirt on it, that's right?
Yeah.
Next
turbo
question.
Wash just as dangerous as a turbo shandy, eh, Maz? Best to be avoided.
Turbo shandy. Next question is from someone who you know, Maz. It's your uncle. Marios Sergades is also part of the Driven Not Hidden collective. Marios says, my question is how to look after Targa Cabrio fabric roofs. And I know this is a loaded question because he's got a lovely 911 Targa.
Yeah. How to look after fabric roofs. So
just take it round to you, don't you, Maz? It's your uncle, surely.
There's actually multiple ways you can look after a cab roof. There's one school of thought in the detailing industry that you want to hit it with mild chemicals, so i.e. just your wash detergent that you wash the car with, and rinse it off. And if you do that regularly, you stave off the roof getting overly contaminated over a long period of time. There's another more probably more practiced school of thought, whereby every month you would do a slightly stronger deep clean on it, where you would spray specific detergent on the roof, give it a good rub, and the rinse off. The problem that a lot of people make with cab roofs is that they get a little bit they put too much detergent in there, and then they get really close with the pressure washer, and then you get sort of pressure washer slash detergent lines in the roofs, and
yes, they're forever, I've seen that.
And they're forever trying to get that, you know, the lines out of the roof. And the problem is because they've gone so close with the pressure washer, it's almost damaging the fabric on top. So what I would recommend is you use your car wash soap, and you give it a light brush, or even with your mitt over the roof, and then stand back 2-3 meters and just rinse it off. And if the roof is clean, don't wash it at all. Just leave it.
Sage advice.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, coming from a Boxster owner as well, Max. Yeah. Hey, then.
What about, Matt, something which I experienced, we swapped some messages about this at the time when I was down in Bristol. So I was out and about, I was away from home. And we talked about it on your last, when you came on the pod last time with the bird poo situation, on the paintwork, getting to it and tackling it. We talked about that. But I then experienced it on my Boxster roof. The challenge of getting rid of that, tackling a specific area, but you don't want to then leave, you get the thing off, but then you don't want to leave a mark. What do you think about that? Do you have to, again, do the whole thing or not at all in that situation? What do you think?
So there's, so we're going to be developing a product for fabric roofs to protect them. But there is a good product called FabSeal, which I think a lot of people might have heard of, because a lot of people use FabSeal to protect their tents and stuff when they go camping, but a lot of detailers use FabSeal to protect the roofs, and if you do get a bird dropping on the fabric roof, it's a lot easier to clean off. The way I would clean it off is get a microfiber towel, rinse it through with warm water, and then massage it off the roof. Avoid putting detergent on there if it's obviously soiled quite, if it's like a pterodactyl that's pooed on the roof, then you may need to use a detergent, and then a mold interior cleaner style detergent is preferable, because it's a lot easier to then rinse off the detergent out of the cab roof.
So kind of a similar process to when it's on the paintwork, really, isn't it? It's like loosening it and trying to lift it off rather than anything else.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, including us, to be honest, you can be guilty of hitting, going after something aggressively. You just want it off. So you go for a really powerful detergent and you just, you want to one hit it and gone. And the art of detailing is to gently remove dirt as much as possible. You want to be efficient. You want to be fast, and you want it to be effective, but you have to be cognizant of the substrate that you're working on and how sensitive it is.
Yeah. When Lee and I got back from the States, I very kindly gave him a lift to meet Laura in my McCann, which, because I'm a bloody nice bloke. We got back to the McCann where it had been parked at Gatwick for a couple of weeks. I'd chosen a parking space very carefully, as you can imagine. I managed to get on the end and I went away from the trees, and I parked under a light, which has some benefits. But unfortunately, there had been some birds sitting on the top of that lamp and they dumped on the McCann. He thought it was hilarious. So they were right on this, they did. And of course, you don't know if that sort of thing's been there for 2 weeks or 2 hours. Unfortunately, there is a little bit of etching on the paint, but what can you do? It's worth it for the trip.
I love that. Yeah, positive vibes only. Hey, yeah, it was talk about coming back from abundance. It took on this like pastiche of an art car with
abstract.
Yeah. Right. What's the next one? Ben Boothroyd here. Okay, this is an interesting one.
I love this question. It's brilliant.
If you had to choose, and you're going to have a, and you're going to have two products in the garage ready to use, but only two products. We're just thinking there ain't two products. There's no two products. Forget about it. But if you had to, Roger, what are they?
I like the way you said gun to the head.
Gun to the head. Huh?
Yeah, gun to the head. There's no dilly dally in here. You've got a gun to your head. Two products, and that's
two
it.
Products.
Roger would knock that gun out of your hand whilst he's going to get his full suite of products.
Yeah, probably. Now I think the there's one product I think which has been labelled by a lot of people is our Decon shampoo, which is able to do literally everything at a certain dilution and wash a lot of things. So that would be one of them. The other problem is like what would be the other product? It would probably be a quick detailer, because that's the easiest, quickest thing that you can put onto a car. It'll give you the best effect. I think that would be the two if I had two in the arsenal, but the likelihood of that is just like the arsenal has to include
gun to the head, gun to the head, gun to the head.
I'm just going to wash it with my hand. That's what I'm going to do.
I'm going to spit on it.
Sounds like a little stocking filler there, the Decon and the quick detail, isn't it? In a nice little packet. Lovely.
That's not a bad idea. It's like maybe some Nine Works branding. No, I'm joking.
Entrepreneurial shit happening here on the fly.
I tell you what, though, just like to add to that and the quick detailer thing. So, Maz, last time I visited GTHQ, I said, I don't really get quick detailer, because you'd sent me some to try. And I'd admit I haven't actually used it, because I used to use quick detailer all the time going to shows. Late Volkswagen, early Porsche days for me, and I'd get to the show, lavish the car with quick detailer, right? So it's looking its best, and that maybe, I don't know, kind of feeds in. That was my interpretation of what Lee earlier on with his question was talking about, like the 10-minute spruce up. And after a while, the swirl marks all over my car, and I thought, that's quick detailer, that's rubbish. But then Maz, you pointed out, which in retrospect is completely obvious, but the fact that I didn't grasp it means that others may not. You should only use quick detailer on a car that is immaculately clean and at no other time.
Absolutely. So cleaning your vehicle and detailing is all about minimizing the potential of damage. That's how you're going to make your car, keep your car looking good. So every time you touch the car, you should be thinking, okay, I could potentially damage it, whether that's a sponge, a wash mitt, a drying towel, a microfiber cloth. Anytime you touch the car, you potentially could damage the paint. And that's why you need to have good processes, you need to have good products, and you need to have good technique. On the product section, you need to understand as well what the products are there to do. Now, reading the label is a good way to start. Hopefully the manufacturers that create these products, including us, write good labels describing the product and how to use it. With quick detailers, we are of the opinion, and this is good practice backed by industry as well, is that you should only touch your vehicle with a finishing product when it's clean. And because you do that to avoid the swirl marks and the potential scratching of paint. Now, one could say, well, but hold on a minute, your quick detailers say that they have lubricants in them and wetting agents and cleaning agents in there to help prevent the scratching. But as with anything, nothing is 100%. And there's different levels of dirt. So what you think is clean when you pull up to the show might not be what I think is clean. Mm-hmm. I see this all the time, and the amount of times that we've seen people go to a show, they park their car up, the car looks great, but then they want to spray the car with quick detail and wipe it down, and in my head I'm thinking, you are scratching the car. I don't care how good the quick detailer is or how good your towel is, there's going to be dirt on that surface, and you're going to be rubbing that dirt on the surface.
Anything that touches a paintwork is physically touching it is an abrasive, whatever way you look at it. Even pressure washer can create an abrasive feeling, because if there's any minerals inside the water, which is then blasted at a PSI, it's the same as sandblasting, but just a very low rate of it. So any sort of touch with it, that's why you know, as Andy says, he uses air to blow off the water so that he doesn't have to drag anything across to collect that water off the car.
Cracking, gents. Absolutely cracking. Next question. Andy, do you want to go for it?
Yes. Russell Hopkins. I like this one. Glass cleaning. What's the best process to follow? I've tried countless products, but never get the desired results. Always smearing and hazing. Could you recommend a process of decontamination? Oh, that's a big word. Cleaning and protection for both the insides and out of the vehicle.
Well, he's in luck. There's this company called Garage Therapy that makes the best glass cleaner ever. Yeah. This is actually something we're very proud of. So our glass cleaner won an award.
Well done.
So Pro Detailer magazine got all of the best glass cleaners from around the world, from various Asian, American, UK and European companies, etc. And they ran them through quite a complex series of tests. They even got testers to come in blindfolded, because they need to see what they're doing, but they decanted the products into different bottles, and so no one knew what the product was, and they tested the products, and then they had the scientific information plus feedback from the testers and their own opinion, and they tallied all the scores up, and we won. Now cleaning glass is an art. There's two things you really need, or three things. You need a good glass cleaner, you need a good towel, a glass cleaning towel specifically, and you need good technique. And your technique for cleaning the outside of the glass is going to be different to cleaning the inside of the glass, albeit it is similar. So cleaning the outside of the glass, you spray it on the glass. What I would recommend doing is you start on the outside of the glass, you do a square, let's say, pattern tracing the glass. So if we're talking about your side window, you would trace the outside of the glass with your towel and the chemical, and then you would finish it in straight lines going either length or the height of the glass. And the reason why you work in one specific pattern is so that if you get streaks, you know that it's you that's caused it, and you can see the streak. Because if it's, for example, if you're going lengthways of the glass and you see a streak that's going the lengthways, you know that you've missed a bit. And it's easier to spot in the light. For the inside, what a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of grease accumulates in the inside of the car and other contaminants, and one of that is the off-gassing from the plastics and the glues and the various substrates in the cabin that happen from the cold and heat cycles. And the other factor is you breathing and coughing and talking inside the car, and that causes an excess of grease and contaminants on the inside of the glass. So when you start spraying the inside of your glass with the glass cleaner, you're asking it to do a hell of a lot with the volume of liquid that you're spraying on the glass to deal with. One of the advantages of the GT glass cleaner is that we have special degreasing agents in there to help break down that contaminant film and remove it. But what you can do when you're cleaning the inside of the glass is clean it first with an all-purpose cleaner and then go in with your glass cleaner, and you'll probably find that you get a much better result by doing that.
Yeah, interesting to differentiate between the inside and the outside, because I guess they are completely different environments in which they're in, really, so they need to be treated accordingly, right?
Correct, yeah. Anything else, Rog?
I'd say on top, no, it's not missed. What I do, because I always find it really frustrating, I clean the outside up and down from the top on the bottom of the windscreen. And in the inside, I do left to right. So that if I'm looking through the windscreen and I see there's a smear to the left or the right, I know it's the inside, not the outside. And I don't sit scrubbing for half an hour trying to figure out why it's not gone. That's the other option. But what Maz said is exactly the same. What you find is new cars are the worst. Brand new cars are the worst, because the amount of off gas earthing that comes from the plastic and even the levers as well and the glues. It just keeps coming back and over and over and over again. And people are like, I cleaned it.
Gives you that grey fog, doesn't it?
Yep. And it's hard to get off.
I don't know if you can see this tool that I'm waving around, but this is marvellous. I found one of these for getting down into bits of glass that you can't reach very well. So down in the corners of the windscreen, it's basically a stick with a pad on the end.
Fiber pad, yeah.
Yeah, I love this thing. Like getting down the back of the rear window and stuff like that, it just makes it so much easier.
Yeah, I mean, for Porsches.
That's my top tip.
Yeah, I mean, for Porsches, and a good shout. For Porsches, something like that is essential. I mean, I'm getting older and I'm getting fatter, and it's harder and harder for me to get in the rear of the 911. And having a tool like that is a godsend.
Yeah, I'd recommend one. I'll try and find a link for that because, yeah, that's the best tool I've found.
Amazing. I guess there's a similar vibe to what some people are saying earlier that might be kind of time poor, but Russell has just got a follow-up, which is worth just touching on. He says, I need to source some new pads for my DA polisher. Could the guys at Garage Therapy recommend a good do-it-all selection? I found the Guards red paint on my Cayman hard to remove swirl, so whilst I've considered moving to an Orbital machine, I was hoping that maybe a switch in material and product may help give a better result. Any recommendations welcome?
I guess, Messi, you can go first because we've got deferring pads.
Yeah, so this is a minefield. So good practice. I'm referring to it as a detailer now. So you always want to start with the least aggressive compound and pad, and you work your way up to more aggressive compounds and pads, because you want to try and remove the least amount of paint or clear coat as possible when you're trying to correct swells and damage on the surface of the vehicle. What he's probably finding is that because it's a dual action machine, the actual throw of the dual action machine is quite small. So I think, I'm testing my memory now, but I think the throw is 6 to 8 centimeter throw or inch. I don't know if it's inch or centimeters. Because the throw of the rotation of the pad material and the dual action polisher is not as long, you get less cut. What I would recommend, so there's it depends on the type of the vehicle and the paint system on the vehicle and the type of clear coat on there, and the type of defects. So this is quite a big subject, but there's two brands that I gravitate towards. So I gravitate towards Svizzera, they're called. Svizzera do thermo pads. And thermo pads are really good at minimizing the heat that they generate when buffing on the paint. And you get a hard, medium, and a soft pad within the Svizzera thermo range. Or I would recommend Lake Country do amazing microfiber pads, and microfiber pads are more aggressive than the foam pad equivalents. And he may find that if he just upgrades his pads to microfiber pads, then he will get more cut from his machine. And then we're talking about compounds, and there's lots of different compounds and things on the market. I mean, I could talk about this for hours and I'm not going to, so you can relax, guys. but I really like, again, the Svizzera compounds or Koch Chemi compounds are the ones that I tend to gravitate to the most.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on. Yeah. It's a lot of detail in there without, like you said, you could probably spend a whole podcast.
We train people. I mean, we can do a whole 2-3 days training people on how to machine polish and correct vehicles and identify defects and what pads and polishes to use. So it's such a large topic that it's sometimes it's a bit difficult for someone who's into this field to answer it, because there's so many variables. It's unbelievable.
literally the term thousand ways to skin a cat comes to mind. It is literally the worst subject you could try and conversate with, because two people could be right and have totally different answers.
Yeah. Depends on how they use the machine, how much pressure.
Yeah, what machine you use. I mean, I have a preference towards a false DA, and Maz has got a preference towards doing a proper
rotary.
So we have differing versions of what we like to use, because we find it easier to use. And that even comes down to the pad you use, foam, microfiber, and you can go to as far as aggressive as a wall, and the walls are really aggressive. But it depends on the car, how much paint's left. 100 questions.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thanks for the honest answer on that. Next question, Max, do you fancy rolling?
Yeah, next one, coming from deepest Essex, with the captain of the Driven Not Hidden collective Essex faction, Geese. Geese has got a problem with his faded nuts, which I thought was a conversation for offline, but guy's happy to
it's quite
to share
common
it
in
with.
Essex, Max.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he said. But it is an interesting question. I think we've all probably noticed it, people who have these cars and people who don't. But people who have 911s, well, not just 911s, but, centre lock equipped cars, and them fading or discolouring or, and kind of often letting the car down. I talked about this with James Good, actually. He's bought a 991.2 GTS recently, and we were standing and looking at that. And guys wondering if there's something you can do to stop that happening in the first place.
Yes. So when I bought my Turbo S, 901 Turbo S, I got as part of the deal, I got them to refresh the wheels and the center locks as part of that, because the previous center locks, which I've actually got, and I'll show you them next time, Lee, to give an example on video on how bad
my nuts.
Yeah, center locks can get. But effectively, I think they're an aluminium substrate. And they, because of the, Roger, do you know the term they use to
anodizing,
that's it. And because they're anodized, they can tarnish quite easily with high alkaline chemicals or acids. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with that is a lot of gentlemen take their cars to the car washes around the public ones, and they use quite harsh traffic film removers to clean the wheels, and you keep hitting that anodized surface with really harsh chemicals, and you leave the wheels are hot, or it's a sunny day, or they dry too quickly, or they're not pressure rinsed off quick enough, then you're effectively staining and oxidizing that anodized finish. The way you would avoid it, if assuming that the car is new and they're not tarnished, is that you would ceramic coat them with a good ceramic wheel coating. And what you're doing there is you're adding effectively a crystalline layer over the top of that finish, which will act as a barrier against the chemical touching the surface. Another way to prevent it as well is by using good high quality detergents on there from well-established brands, and diluting those chemicals to the recommended dilution ratios and being responsible with them. And what I mean by that is, don't clean your wheels when it's blazing hot sun out and the wheel surface is really hot, because what happens is that the chemical hits that hot surface, evaporates off the carrier, which is normally water, and leaves behind the really aggressive chemicals on the surface, which then stains the center locks. So you want to wash the car in the shade on the cool surface, use the chemicals as instructed by the manufacturer, and don't let the chemicals dry on there, and you should be okay. Lastly, and I know I'm going on a bit here, is snow foams. So everyone loves their Instagram snow foam shots, but one of the one thing that we at Garage Therapy state on our bottle is that we only want the foam to be around on the surface for about 5 or 6 minutes. There's various scientific reasons for that. But one of the reasons is that we don't want to encourage people leaving these high alkaline detergents on the surface for like 10 minutes, because the longer you leave a detergent on the surface, the more chance it has of potentially staining that surface, eating into the finish, because some of these chemicals are corrosive and caustic. You just need to be careful of that.
This also just kind of just drifts back to one of the first questions we had as well, where the turbo clean and the issue of going out for a drive and then coming back and then immediately cleaning the car, you will be hitting those wheels, which are red hot usually because the brakes have been used even sparingly, are going to be hot, and you are going to basically stain them very quickly if they've got anything quite delicate on them.
Yeah. I think it's another use for the old caravan wheel covers as well. Stops you getting the snow foam back over the wheels when you've done the wheel, you've cleaned the wheels, and then you go back and clean the car. You get those.
Do you work for Amazon at all, Andy?
No, I don't.
You're selling your affiliation links.
I'm just trying to spread my top tips.
Okay.
Wondering my second. Second product idea of the day, what about some garage therapy centre lock covers, caps. You can put it on before you start washing.
Yeah, but that's never going to... So that's never... The problem with that is that you need to have a perfect seal so the water doesn't... And the detergent doesn't get behind the cap, right? And then obviously it sits there for longer because you think, oh, I'm safe, I've got the caps on there.
Yeah.
Andy's idea is actually a very good idea for that.
Shower caps for whole wheels.
Stop it, guys. His ego is going to be stratospheric before long, isn't it?
Detailing, you're fluffing a competitor there, remember? So is that, because, you know, it's such a common thing to see when you're looking at cars, you know, and we're all looking at cars with centre lock wheels because they're typically really interesting cars. Is that, has Porsche changed the way they do the centre lock, you know, say from 997 to 991, or is it the same?
No, I believe they're all anodized. It's a really good question, actually, Max. My gut is telling me that the first iterations of the center locks and the 997s are different to the current 991 and onwards iterations.
The reason why I would guess they were anodized is because they need to be torqued, and paint would not be allowed to torque them. They would actually to burr off the paint, so they have to be anodized inside the metal.
I'm going to be honest with you, Max. I don't know. I suspect there's a difference between the gens, but I don't know 100%.
Yeah. So people need to adopt good practice then. Otherwise, they're on this journey and they ain't stopping it.
So you can get them refurbished. I think there is a company, but I don't know it off the top of my head what that company name is. But it is expensive. But not as expensive as £1,200 replacing the centre lock.
Andy, next question. Just for the benefit of the listener, Andy now appears to be wearing his caravan wheel cover.
Thought you might like it. I thought you might. Yeah, keep me dry while I'm in the garage here.
Well, okay, with that silver top and the glasses you're wearing, you definitely do look like Billy Connolly now.
Well, it stops Andy rusting.
Yeah, I'm not going to rust. Okay, next up is John Miller. How soon after new paintwork can you apply a ceramic coating? There seems to be conflicting information on the internet. Is it product specific, or is there a general rule? I guess this is after you've had like maybe a bit of paint done on the car, or maybe it's a brand new car.
I think you would have to speak to the manufacturer or the person that actually did do the work for you, because they will have different types of paint that have been used. 2K paint can essentially be almost coated within a day or so of coming out with a proper true 2K paint. But others, water-based ones, you know, you're going to have to gas off for some weeks until they actually, you know, completely come off.
I guess that for a new car, I guess most new cars are a good few weeks old anyway, aren't they? So you'll be fine as soon as you get it from the dealer, ready to go.
So new cars. So I believe we touched on it actually on the last episode. So a lot of the manufacturers moved over to quote unquote water-based paints that allowed them to that allowed the paint finish to cure quickly. With a new car, a lot of, you know, it takes a while for that car to be painted and then go through the complete build cycle, so the paint would have gassed off way before an individual has seen it. So you can coat new cars almost or immediately, effectively, and that's what happens. If you have paintwork done, it just depends on the body shop and what types of lacquer they're using and whether or not they cure the paint in an oven. I will throw caution to the wind and say that just leave that panel a couple of months to let any of that solvent evaporate off the surface before you seal it in. Most modern paints, however, you can coat them almost immediately. I say paints, clear coat I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. But you always run that risk because a lot of the body shops don't really even know how good the lacquer they're using is, if I'm honest with you. And finding a body shop that really understands the lacquer system that they're the lacquer technology that they're using is a job in itself. In answer to the question, is generally you can coat it after a couple of weeks. However, throw caution to the wind, I would wait a month or two. Mm.
I think generally in this conversation and previous ones we've had, like the merits of a ceramic coat to help like protect that vehicle is kind of there to be seen, to be honest. With that in mind, we've got one more question from Sunil. I'm going to switch up because the last one we did have, it's kind of similar to things we've covered previously in the conversation. So Sunil Garania has said, if a car has had a ceramic coating applied several years ago and then wants a new one, a different brand to be applied after washing and using a clay bar, can a new one of a different brand be applied after washing and using a clay bar, or would some extra prep be required to remove the remnants of the previous ceramic coat?
Well, any coating you need to be reapplied has to be basically redone in the same process as how the original one was put on. You would have to polish it, find any defects in the paint, bring it back to its its best possible quality, and then you apply it. There's also the school of thought that even with some coatings in high traffic areas with front bumpers, side skirts, rear arches, the coating may not even be there anymore. That it may have been worn off already at that point. So the task is actually you would have to start with a blank canvas by polishing the car back to its original to then apply it. Because the best option for that bond, for that ceramic coating to bond to that paintwork, needs to be fresh. And you don't want anything else in between that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, your owner should be able to tell when washing their car if like the ceramic coat is still present or not. But how long would you guys, and I know there are variables to this, but how long would you expect a decent ceramic coat to last if properly maintained?
We can talk about this for days. You can't necessarily tell whether a ceramic coating is still on the surface or not just by washing it. There's been many instances whereby you could wash a car and there'll be no water behavior. So the panels will look flat, i.e. the water's sticking to the panel and you think, oh yeah, there's no ceramic coating on there, but it could just be that the coating is actually clogged with mineral deposits and contaminants and it needs to be cleaned accordingly for that coating to come back. We actually saw a little bit of that. Was it Jeremy in his Carrera T, the yellow one?
Yes.
When I cleaned the side of his car during the demonstration on the GT detailing day, and it revived his ceramic coating because it was clogged. Now, what I would say, if the car's been coated 2-3 years have passed, and you haven't gone back to see the installer to run their maintenance routine on it, more than likely you'd want to remove the coating anyway and reapply a fresh coating, and it will go along the lines of what Roger said. You'd have to decontaminate it chemically, mechanically, machine polish it, and then apply the new coating on there. Because if you're going to invest in a product to protect your paintwork, then you want to do it properly. You don't want to put it over the top of old coating, which it might not bond properly.
Yeah, that's cracking advice. Because again, like, I know even people that have PPF, you know, will then ceramic coat over the top and whatnot. But and Maz, again, you've shown me with your ceramic coat. I can't remember the name of it. Is it Hades?
So on Cerberus, I applied on your car.
Cerberus, right? Yeah. So like, and the various bits and pieces we've done, like, I've fully appreciated the merits of that coating all over again. Like, even because you put it on plastics as well, didn't you, on the car?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so wicked. So it's I don't know, maybe something we'll touch on more going forward. And certainly, like, we've got a host of other questions from the collective to put to you guys. So maybe if you're happy to, maybe come back on next series and we can touch on that again if you're happy.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Perhaps before you go, it might be for a little bit of fun if you've got one do that advice you could give to somebody and one don't, absolutely don't do this, maybe just to finish on. If one of you takes one and one the other, that might be quite fun just to finish.
Go on, Roger, yeah, you do the do.
A do? One do. Wash your car either at the end of the day or the very beginning of the day before the midday.
Ooh, okay. So
never in the heat, never in the sun. Yeah, never in the heat, never in the sun. You do that, you're 9 times out of 10, you'll make a much better job of cleaning the car.
Yeah. That is a cracker, to be fair. Yeah, I love that. Love that, Roger. And Maz, for the don't?
Never dry wipe the car.
Ooh, okay then. Okay, why is that? You got to, I guess, touch on that and give
because
reason it.
And every time, so I see this a lot, and I get very upset inside when I see people touching people's cars. Even when they point with their fingers, because all it takes is your finger just to touch the surface of a dirty panel and you'll scratch the car. Now, you may not see the scratches in daylight, but when the sun comes out and the sun is fading at the end of the day and you see the light hit the car, you're going to see all these swirl marks from where people have touched the car or where you've wiped the car wanting to get the dust off. And as I said earlier, you want to avoid touching the car until you wash it.
That's just reminded me of a car park incident in the US of A. There was this white pickup truck that had been left by two guys, and someone else who will remain nameless went to the front of it and drew something on the bonnet. I wonder if it's still there.
Well, yeah.
That poor rental truck of yours.
I wonder who that was, Andy. Yeah. So yeah, you know, you contaminated that truck basically with your
my dirty finger.
Well,
we'll find out, Andy, when it arrives, because Lee bought it and it's on a boat on its way from the States at the moment. It's going to be at Southampton in a couple of weeks' time.
So much love for the time. Nissan, yeah. Isn't it?
Nissan Frontier.
Yeah. I might as well have needed to buy it if it wasn't for that damage waiver. Hey. Fantastic. All right, look, Maz, Roger, honestly, thank you so much, like, for your information and knowledge. Like, it's completely boundless and hopefully it's to the benefit of certainly the collective, but absolutely everybody listening to this. I'm certain everybody listening would have learned something, but hopefully lots, this episode. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you both. That's
brilliant.
So thank you to Maz and Roger for their time there. We've got a little bit of admin before the episode finishes.
Yeah, I've got a collective update. We've had some more new collective members this week. Lovely. I'll dive in as we were taking quite a bit of time doing our detail and stuff. Let's get through these bits fairly quickly, I think. We'll start off with Colin Coleman, who's a Works Plus member, taking advantage of the subscription to Total 911 magazine. He's based in South Wales, And he says, I've got a few Porsches. Some of the highlights are a 991 Speedster in Irish green.
Oh, ooh, lovely, jubbly.
Which you, sir. 997.2 GT3, GT4 RS, 718 Spider, 997.2 Carrera, 992.2.1 Carrera 4S, yeah. And a 981 Cayman GTS. My word. You got all the
serious gear.
All the
serious
bases gear covered.
Lovely, jeez, lovely, lovely.
I think you need to go a little bit more old school, though. Come on, Colin. Let's add some old school stuff in there. But yeah, lovely little collection. Yeah, maybe we need to get over and visit Colin in Wales. Go and see him.
I tell you what, as well, as we very well know, great roads around there in which indeed to enjoy those cars. So yeah, fantastic, fantastic.
He's based in Usk, South Wales. So yeah, it sounds good. Okay, next up is Fraser Duffy, who's a works driver. He is in Lymington. And he has a 987 Cayman S.
Really nice. Great one, I think, if I remember rightly from the pics.
You are correct, yes.
Lovely.
One, yeah. 987 Cayman S. And nice Lymington as well, fairly close to us as
yeah,
well.
Local.
So that's awesome.
Lovely part of the world.
Indeed. Okay. Henry Richardson, he's a rookie. He is in Epsom in Surrey. So close to a few lads there in the collective. Has a couple of 996s, a turbo and a C4S. C4S he uses as a daily. The turbo is a little bit cosseted, I'd say.
Well, it's nice again, like with the difference there between that Aspen and turbo. It's quite an interesting position from that platform. So
indeed.
Yeah. And the 4S, isn't the 4S lapis blue and the turbo is cobalt blue, which is a mega 996 colour. Great. I love that.
Yeah, definitely. Very definitely. Nice. Lapis blue, that's, I think, a beautiful, beautiful colour.
Nice colour. Dark, darker than the cobalt, isn't it?
Yeah. Both.
Yeah, lovely.
Okay. And next up, we're going to Europe. We're going to the Netherlands and it's Jasper Matters, who's a rookie driver. He is in, Drodrick in the Netherlands. Sorry for the pronunciation of where you live. I'm sure I've murdered that. He has a 993 in Irish blue, which I remember looking a lovely colour when he posted that up on the Driven Not Hidden Collective WhatsApp group.
Yeah, another nice shade of blue as well. And also, I think Arna, who has listened to this podcast for a very long time and is one of the early members of the collective movement, nice for him to have a buddy from the Netherlands.
Indeed.
Now,
so
absolutely.
That's
absolutely
fantastic.
Yeah. That's it. I'm all done.
Excellent.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Thanks as always for joining. And yeah, we look forward to taking you on your journey in the next weeks, months, and hopefully years. So
indeed.
Wicked. All right, gents. Are we doing any spread the loves or anything this week?
Yeah, I can do one quickly, not a traditional spread the love, but something I just thought I'd mention. If you want me just to jam something in at the end there.
If you'd like, Max, yeah, very welcome to go for it.
Wicked. Okay. Right, before we go, guys, I just want to do a little spread the love, a little special one for my stepdaughter, Lily, who passed her driving test today.
Yay! Congratulations, Lily. Does that mean you've got a new taxi driver?
Exactly.
You can go out and get drunk for once.
Exactly. So she is now on the road in a Hyundai i10. On the road to becoming a Driven Not Hidden Collective member and Porsche owner at some point in the future, I hope. Big day. That's a big day, isn't it?
That is a very memorable day. You know, the world opens up to you and it really does open up to you when you get a set of wheels. So absolutely truck on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, crack in.
Fantastic. Spread the love. I like that.
Yeah. And what a nice way to finish, I guess. Whether it's your first or your latest, there's still many miles ahead, hopefully, for us all. So with that in mind, enjoy your journeys wherever they are over the next week. And we'll see you for our next installment very, very soon on 9Ways Radio.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden Collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the Nineworks community, you can do so at patreon.com/Nineworks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.